Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Mail.Bag for the Strickland Podcast Network. This is your host, Jeremy Cohen. With me, as always, is my good friend, Schwinny Poo. Schwinn, how are we doing?
We're good. We are watching, apparently, every other team in the NBA have a meltdown today. We're living good right now, quietly observing all these disaster franchises.
It's fun when it's not your own, right?
It's great.
You just sit back, relax, know you're in good hands. It's fantastic. Yeah, so for those of you who may be unaware or are in the need of a recap, today, June 16th, a lot of shit went down. It started out early with Chris Paul being out indefinitely because of a positive COVID test. It soon followed with Kawhi Leonard and his ACL injury. The rest of the season is kind of in doubt, let alone the series. After that, the Pelicans fired Stan Van Gundy, and then Scott Brooks and the Wizards did not come to terms, so he was let go. They parted ways, and then the Mavs parted ways with Donnie Nelson after the hilarity that was that The Athletic article. And then LaMelo Ball run won Rookie of the Year, but you know, who cares about that? And it is still only...
Jack might care about that.
Well, Jack... yes, he might. In fact, I will let that be our lead in. Joining us today to discuss all things of what happened and also the Northwest Division is our favorite Northwest correspondent, so to speak. He writes for... I already asked you, and I just forgot it, but I think it's Canis Hoopus. But you told me it doesn't necessarily matter. So here we are. But yeah, Jack Borman, how are we doing today, Jack?
You know, I'd be a little better, if I'm being honest, if Anthony Edwards run Rookie of the Year, but I mean, anybody with two eyes and a brain voted for Anthony Edwards, so it's all right. I'm beyond it. I'm over it. LaMelo Ball broke his wrist and then played like dog shit for 12 games and won as many playoff games as Anthony Edwards did, who is a football player that doesn't like basketball, doesn't impact winning, isn't a good scorer, isn't efficient, and is just muscle and nothing else. So that's where we're at. But you know, it's gonna get better. It's gonna get better when, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, everybody's looking at Anthony Edwards like he's way better than anybody else from that class. So it's all right. And he tweeted something today, or he quote tweeted a couple of hunted emojis I think it was his trainer saying that they poked the bear and they shouldn't have done that. So I don't know. I'm always pro your own player saying like, don't poke the bear and just wait to see what happens when the bear gets poked. So I'm pretty fired up for year two from Anthony Edwards, but no, I was expecting LaMelo to win. I just think it's unfortunate with the marketing of the NBA and how that really affects a lot of local beat reporters' view of other teams. Because I think if anybody watched, you know, around the league, at least somewhat closely over the second half of the season, I think it was fairly evident that, you know, Anthony Edwards was leaps and bounds the best rookie in the class. Obviously, LaMelo was hurt, but you know, people are saying, but LaMelo's first half was so good. I'm obviously biased, but I also watch a ton of NBA and probably watched at least 10 games of every team in the NBA this season, at minimum, probably closer to 20 for every team. And LaMelo is great. I love LaMelo. He's a ton of fun to watch. Don't hold any type of grudge or anything against him, but I just think Anthony Edwards did it so much more consistently, and his ceiling this season was much, much higher, which is unfortunate that, you know, that media members who some of whom don't even take basketball really seriously, they just kind of cover the beat as they were kind of learned in school, which there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but I just don't think those people should be voting on awards, especially those that are tied to know, financial ramifications.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Jack Borman wishes LaMelo Ball was never born, wishes he was just didn't play in the NBA, period. Maybe wishes he were dead. I don't know. Who's to say? Yeah.
Definitely not me.
Definitely not. No, not whatsoever. As a very unbiased person, I would say that Emmanuel Quickley won more playoff games than Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball did combined.
And Tyrese Halliburton. Can't forget about Nate Duncan's Rookie of the Year, Tyrese Halliburton.
I got to say, as a Rookie of the Year placeholder, or I guess I'd bet on Tyrese Halliburton. I was kind of hoping he would win just for the financial reasons, but he didn't. It's fine. Fortunately, the Nets decided to go down by a lot of points last night, and I just scooped that up and covered the damage. So no fault, no foul. I just completely fucked that up. But that's all right.
Yeah, I don't know how you fucked that up. That was impressive.
I don't know. That's that's just me. So, yeah, plenty to talk about today for sure. Plenty of people to rip into for fun as well. So I think why don't we start off with a good Schwinn rant? And then, Jack, I know there's one player in particular that you are in the mood to tear into, but maybe it's changed. There's a lot that's gone on since we last talked. And then we can start to get into our questions. So, Schwinn, the floor is yours.
What am I ranting about?
Whatever you want, man. There's so much that's happened. You could, any of it. It could be all of it. It could be whatever you want.
Not even giving me a prompt here. This is terrible. This is terrible hosting, and this is very unprofessional.
How about this?
Says the one who definitely has never just gone out drunk cruise control during the podcast.
Never. All right, I'll tell you what. Clearly, you are someone who needs a little bit more foreplay. So, why don't we return to that?
You gotta wine and dine me, you know?
All right, I will wine and dine you. Jack is a true gentleman and a scholar who knows and is prepared to be ready for anything. So, Jack, why don't you go first? Tell us, what's the one thing that you want to unleash for
What's grinding your gears right now?
Yes.
Mykonos Kid Gilchrist, man. Giannis Antetokounmpo. I swear to God, this dude can't do anything in the playoffs unless the other team is injured. I mean, for crying out loud. I mean, he hasn't won a significant playoff series that his team wasn't just overwhelmingly favored to win. Yet, everybody thinks he's one of the best defensive players in the NBA. Yet, he's too big of a pussy to guard Kevin Durant when Kevin Durant is lighting the world on fire with one of the greatest games in the history of the NBA. And he's just sitting there on the sidelines, you know, like pretty much in the corner, just waiting to roll over and block somebody's shot. But meanwhile, they're playing in drop coverage, just letting Brooke Lopez sit down there in the under the basket. And KD's just carving him up with a layup line, just pulling into mid-range jumpers at the free throw line. You know what? I hate the fact that Giannis is trying to go the Steph Curry route of, like, you know, the gentleman superstar, if you will, where, like, Steph doesn't ruffle any feathers, but he's a leader and he knows when to just grab the game by the throat and just take it over. And he does it his way without just, like, necessarily being like, hey, fuck you, Steve Kerr, I'm taking this over. Like, this is my show. This is how I'm doing it. Like, Giannis is just sitting there like the good soldier, like, oh, you know, I'm just going to keep doing what coach tells me to do. Keep shooting these fucking prime Kobe post fadeaway jumpers when the game's on the line and blow a 17-point lead in the last, you know, 19 minutes of the game, like a complete idiot. And, you know, the fact that he didn't go over to Bud and say something to the effect of, hey, man, screw you. This is what I'm doing. I'm D'ing up KD and we're winning this game. The fact that he just seemed completely content with just letting the game just piss away. And then you have Bucks fans and all these people on Twitter that are just like, oh, Bud's atrocious, fire Bud, yada, yada, yada. You know what? Bud is an awful playoff coach. He's been a very, very good regular season coach. And I think the adjustments he made this season with the Bucks offense, specifically with moving Brooke Lopez more to that dunker spot so that when they use Giannis as a role man, that Giannis can kind of have that short roll creation option. I think that's really opened up a lot for them, especially when you have, you know, guys like Drew Holiday and Bryn Forbes or Dante DiVincenzo in the corners, or like a Bobby Portis. And Bud's been great with that. But and Bud definitely is not absolved of any blame last night whatsoever. But like the playoffs, they're not about role players. They're about superstars making superstar plays over and over again. And generally the team whose superstars play the best are going to win not only the game, not only the series, but the whole damn thing. And Kevin Durant played like he was the baddest man on the planet last night and the best player in the NBA. He grabbed the game by the throat and just didn't let up until the final buzzer sounded. And Giannis just is over there being completely content, doesn't want to switch on to KD at all for not even one possession down the stretch of the game. Giannis did not impact KD or impede him in any way, shape, or form while the game was getting away from him. And then in the post-game press conference, this dude comes out and says, Kevin Durant was like the best player on the floor, is the best player in the league. Are you fucking kidding me? Do you know how sorry of an answer that is? That was like when DeMar DeRozan said post-game, like after LeBron like swept his ass for the third or fourth year in a row, being like, yeah, well, we would have won if LeBron was on our team. Like, do you want to know like how just like soft of an answer that is? Like, Giannis is like this guy who like supposedly like has the dog in him and like supposedly is like this next guy of like the Kobe line of like, you know, having that true dog in them and just like unleashing it. But like, cool, you run and you dunk and you didn't do anything else last night and you're terrified of going to the free throw line in the playoffs, which is a lot of times where games are won and lost in the playoffs. Like, it just blows my mind how all these Bucks fans are like, yeah, well, Middleton's shit. Or, yeah, well, Drew Holiday hasn't done shit. Or Brooke Lopez is shit. Or Bud is shit. No one's looking at Giannis being like, hey, Giannis, like, you got to do more, man. Like, I don't care that you had 34 points. Like, 34 points running and dunking, like, cool, that's great. But, like, you're first team all defense and you're guarding Jeff Green, who is still torching your ass. Jeff Green had, like, 27 points last night. And I feel like, I mean, I could be wrong with like Giannis guarding Jeff Green for most of the game, but I mean, the point still stands. I mean, you could be guarding Joe Harris or, you know, James Harden, who's sitting his ass in the corner, not doing stuff for half the game because he's hurt. And Giannis is literally giving you nothing on defense as a first team, all defensive player. And then on offense in the fourth quarter is shooting pull-up threes, step-back threes, and prime Kobe fadeaways from the post when you have one-legged James Harden on him. And James Harden knows that Giannis is a fraud. Like, James Harden, if you look at that video of when he gets, it's one-on-one with Giannis in the post, I think it's a tie game, and James Harden waves off help. He's like, no, I got this. And he just gives Giannis one hard shove or thrust in the butt or whatever it is. And Giannis is like, oh shit, I can't do this, and shoots a turnaround, you know, like one-legged step back that has no chance. You're up 17 and you let that game slip away because you're too scared to go against your coach or take the game by the horns. And somehow, and then also you just give like the biggest, you know, softy Charmin double ultra soft shit at the post game press conference, and nobody's looking at you saying like, hey man, maybe you should have done more. And then after the game, he's like, I want the challenge of guarding Kevin Durant. Like, cool, you can win on Zoom. The Timberwolves sure as hell know how to win on Zoom. I know all about winning on Zoom, but like, our team doesn't win on the floor, and winning on the floor is what matters. And like, if Giannis isn't doing that shit on the floor in the fourth quarter of a big game, when whoever wins game five of a tied 2-2 series goes on to win like 73% of the time, and you're like too scared to go out there and do it, man. Just, yeah. Really just horrid that Giannis gets away skate clean from this. Also, Schwinn, I don't know how you do this for 10 minutes at a time, man. My throat is fucking falling apart here at the end. Holy hell.
Yeah, it's just it's a natural talent. It's my one natural talent. But the Giannis stuff is like pretty interesting to me because I think a lot of it is, there's a lot of what you just said I completely agree with. You know, I saw, I think Seth Partnow tweeted something like, I'm so shocked that like people still think defense is just about like who guards who. And I'm like, look, I get what he's saying. But I also think like there's a point in a game where you have to take it on yourself, or you got to go to Bud and be like, dude, we can't just single cover KD, bro, because he's literally lighting us the fuck up. Like, they're playing KD, Jeff Green, and like fucking Make-A-Wish kids or something, basically, in that fucking lineup. And you're just honoring, like, you're defending them like you still got Harden. And, like, it's like, yes, James Harden is on the floor, but that's not James Harden. Kyrie Irving is not on the floor. Like they're playing. They were playing defense yesterday. Like they still had their full strength team on the floor, and that's just so fucking bad. And that I think is like primarily on Budenholzer. But what I take issue with Giannis, and why I think the thing with Budenholzer, it's not a great match. On top of Budenholzer's shit too, of like I don't know what he was doing, just like, you know, not playing PJ Tucker for long stretches. Like I didn't understand that at all, because Tucker's done as good a job on KD as you can do. And not just this playoff series, like, you know, you go back to when Tucker was in Houston and KD was in Golden State. Like he gave him problems again, relatively speaking. But like Giannis is too fucking nice to like stir the boat with. Like if Budenholzer's like, no, I want you to stay on Jeff Green, Giannis is like too fucking nice and not, and I hate using this, but like not enough of an alpha to just be like, no, fuck that. Like I'm going to do this shit, or no, we got to do this. Like he's not going to rock the boat. And Budenholzer is too nice to like tell Giannis like, hey dude, stop shooting fucking idiot 3-point shots and stop shooting, you know, horrible. Like Giannis, can you learn a post move, please? Like he's too nice to like push him in the ways that he needs to be pushed. And I think that ultimately it's a fact, like neither of them wants confrontation, but like you need confrontation. Like they need to have confrontation. And I think last year the biggest mistake they made was not firing Budenholzer. Like that bubble performance, the bubble is bullshit, but like it being bullshit is exactly why the way they went out should have been ringing alarm bells, because they looked so devoid of ideas and whatever. And I hear you, like Budenholzer has done a lot in the regular season and adapted things and tried new stuff and deviated from how he's generally been prior to this season. But I think he's getting exposed in this playoffs. I think Giannis is getting exposed. I think Giannis has been getting exposed in the playoffs ever since that Raptors series in 2019. He has no, like, this idea of Giannis, it's actually very funny, because I think a lot of his issues are exactly what we saw with Julius Randle in the playoffs this year. That, like, your LeBron point forward shit, that's all fine and dandy in the regular season for it was for Randle this year, and it was for it'll be for Giannis for forever, for as long as he's in, you know, his physical prime anyway. He can win a bunch of regular season games doing the point Giannis fucking thing, okay?
He's a regular season player.
Yeah, he can't be that guy in the playoffs. And until they accept that as an organization, until Budenholzer accepts that as a coach or whoever their coach is, until they get Giannis to accept that, I don't know if Giannis is like pushed back, like, oh no, this is what I want to be, like, I don't want to be just some like post guy or big man, but like he's got to be a play finisher first and foremost. He cannot be the number one focal point of an offense. And we see it now year after year in the playoffs. There are limitations to it because he doesn't have a good handle. His vision is not good. Like he gets assists because he draws so much attention and he can kick and he's so gifted physically that like, even though he's not reading the defense in advance, he's still so physically gifted, he can make a play later than most other guys ever could. But those windows are so much tighter in the playoffs, and everybody's so much more fucking clued into like what he wants to do, how to defend him. They're more committed. They're more locked in. He can't get away with it. And like the fact of the matter is he's been fucking sitting there for the last 3 years, this guy, and the offseason he's going to work on his jumper. He's going to work on his jumper. He doesn't fucking have a jumper. Fucking jumper.
Have you seen his jumper when he first came into the NBA?
It was fine.
It was totally fine. Super clean and mechanical.
And I don't know what happened. I know people want to like they blame Jason Kidd. I kind of think that feels like a big cop out. Like, oh, Jason Kidd ruined his jumper, and we hate Jason Kidd, so let's just throw that on his door. No, fuck that. Like Giannis has I'm sure he trains with his own guys all the time. I'm sure he's invested in his own career. That I know for, like, we know, like, he, nobody, like, we all know he works hard. No one's denying that he puts work into his game, but, like, he's not better at anything. Like, he's not better at anything that, like, in terms of just skill. I'm not talking about, like, decision making and read and react and that kind of shit, but just pure skill on the ball, what he can do with it. He's not better at anything than he was 3 years ago, and his shot fucking sucks. And, like, at some point, that says something about your limitations as a player, which isn't to say he's not a great player. He's obviously still a great player, but he is not that guy. And until he and the organization and the coach, whoever the fuck it is, hopefully it's not Budenholzer for their sake after the season, until they accept that, like, this guy is a play finisher, he should be used as a center. He should be used as a role man. He should get his fucking ass. He should go pray to Hakeem Olajuwon and go learn post moves from him. Because a guy his size, and I, you know, fuck his size. Anybody who is a wing type player, he's like, oh, if you want to say he's a big, whatever, that's fine. He's like a wing big. If you're a wing or you're a big guy, if you're a high usage scoring option, if you don't have any semblance of a post game 7 years into your career, then you're fucking up. And that go like Devin Booker is a much smaller player than Giannis. He's got fucking 50 moves down there in the post. Okay. You look at like any guy that's Giannis's size or is a wing that's smaller, like Kawhi, KD, fucking Middleton on his team has more of a fucking post game than he does. Like, you can just go down the list. Obviously, big guys in general, you know, any top level big man that's a legitimate scoring option has a post game.
Not unless their name Kristaps Porzingis, but continue.
Yeah, but I said a legitimate scoring option.
Well, that's true. That's fair.
But
who's that?
He's this 7'3" tall guy that can't do anything but shoot threes.
What's his name? Like, Tingus Pingus?
Yes, that is it. Pistaps. Yep.
All right.
But like that's what it is to me. Like, I just like I'm not ready yet to call him a fraud or whatever, because I know that NBA Twitter loves that word, by the way. Everybody's a fraud. Basically, unless you win the championship in a given season, you're a fraud, according to NBA Twitter. So LeBron's a fraud now, and there's so many frauds in the NBA. Maybe Kawhi is a fraud because he got injured.
I'm a fraud.
Yeah, you are. We're all frauds. But like, I'm not ready to go there yet. Where I do think that there have been examples. Like, I mean, that fumble he had at the end of the game yesterday, like that, I hate like being like he choked. I don't know if I want to, if you want to call it a choke, but he was definitely feeling the pressure. I think you could see that in his face after like his reaction to that. You could kind of see it. But like, I'm not ready to call him a fraud yet. But like, if this motherfucker goes away this offseason and doesn't come back with any post game, like the only thing he can do in the post is take that ridiculous fadeaway that Harden was anybody's happy to give him because it's not a good shot. Like, if he doesn't come back with a post game, I'm so out on him, because like, I just think it's so unacceptable to be anybody that's like 6'5" or taller. If you don't have any post game at all, like 6'5" and you're like a 25 plus usage guy, right? So you're like a top 1, 2, 3 option for your team. If you don't have any semblance of a post game at that size, like, that's so embarrassing to me. And it's also like, It would simplify the game for him, because I don't think he has particularly great vision when he drives. But given his size, his length, and the fact that he can just palm a ball like it's a fucking tennis ball, like, you would think playing out of the post, like, that would actually make his life as a distributor a lot easier if he could just capitalize. Because, like, even yesterday, right? Like, he doesn't have a post game, but even without a post game, he has gravity down there because he's so fucking big. So teams don't want to just, like, play him straight up in the post, right? I know Harden baited him into that other one, but I really feel like if he had kept going with that another dribble or two, help would have come no matter what. But like, he just doesn't leverage any of that effectively. And then, like, you know, I just find that ridiculous for a player's size to not have any kind of like legitimate post game. I mean, like, fucking Julius Randle has more of a fucking back to the basket game than him. You know, like, I don't know. The entire thing is bananas to me.
Yeah, the one that I just want to add a couple of things. Like, you talked initially about like Giannis, like, not wanting to like deviate from the scheme. And I do want to get technical for a second. Like the Bucks defense is built so that it's built to guard pick and roll teams. It's built to guard, you know, a team where Brooke Lopez can come and show at, like move up out of the paint when guys are coming downhill so that Giannis can rotate off the backside and then Middleton or DiVincenzo or Holiday or whoever you have that's there on the opposite wing can pre-rotate to the corner. It's very similar to what Tibbs' defense is. And obviously then the point is, so you have Giannis coming over the top is kind of like your free safety to make plays. But the way that I view defense in the playoffs is not like, is your first defensive like strategy going to work or not? Because obviously like teams are going to adjust. And I view like the late third and fourth quarters of playoff games as, can you steal a possession here or there by trying to give a team a different look to junk up one possession and force one bad shot? Or in this sense, to take KD out of just like an insane rhythm. Where like, is Giannis good navigating screens on the perimeter? No, he's not. But like, you could use the only person on the floor who's somewhat athletic enough and big enough, just physically like tall enough and has long enough arms to defend Kevin Durant's shot is Giannis. PJ Tucker's like 6'5 or 6'6. Like when PJ Tucker is like contesting KD's shot, like it does not bother him unless he's physically like touching KD. And like the fact that they didn't even try and steal a possession by switching Giannis onto KD or doubling him, they didn't try doubling him once, which was just outrageous to me. And the fact is, like, players have to realize that. Like, your coach cannot be the one that is calling out literally everything for you. Like, players need to be able to adjust by themselves on the fly, whether it be like shot selection or like Drew Holiday calling a play or Giannis saying like, hey, let's run this play. It's not like you're a baby sitting in a high chair and like you're completely dependent on someone to come feed you. You know what I mean? Like Mike Budenholzer isn't like shooting turnaround fadeaways when he's in the post, you know? And the other thing that I want to add about Giannis specifically, like with his post-game bag, like the reason, and I wrote about this last summer when like Devin Booker trade rumors were kind of rumbling. I like broke down Devin Booker's game on the site. And the biggest thing I noticed with Booker, I don't think any player outside of maybe Steph Curry or Klay Thompson in the entire NBA has better footwork, or Kyrie has better footwork than Devin Booker. Like his footwork in the post with his ball fakes and the way that he's able to elevate and get his shots off, like all of his like shooting angles and all of his fakes and everything is all on top of his foundation, which is insanely good footwork. Giannis has terrible footwork. Like the amount of times he travels or has kind of loose feet that drag around.
Well, I don't think he works on it. That's why. Like it's
that's
so
my
obvious.
Point. Like, yeah. Like even if he just had better footwork where he could like, you know, do your classic, like take your, you know, other foot and drop it back and just like fake and then just go with an up and under. Like Giannis rarely does that.
He doesn't it's have all a drop just, step. He doesn't have like a basic drop step.
Yeah, all he does is he changes the cadence or in direction which he euro steps. That's all he does. That's the only technical basketball skill he has. He has no dribbling skills. He has no passing skills. He has very poor vision for someone whose usage rate is as high as it is. And all he can do is dunk. Like, yeah, he has some pretty good touch around the rim. And I guess that's one thing that's gotten probably a little bit better over the last few years. But like, and obviously like he's an MVP of the league, but that's a regular season award. Like it's hard to defend a guy like Giannis, just a physical specimen like him for one game. But it's like, if you want to compare Giannis to like Ben Simmons is a better defender than Giannis. Ben Simmons is a better passer, has better vision. And you could make, and he's definitely a better dribbler and playmaker. And like the only thing about Giannis is that he just looks to score every time. Like if Ben Simmons had like Giannis's mentality of I'm just going to score every time, I think Ben Simmons could put up somewhat similar numbers to Giannis. I really do. Like if, I think if Ben Simmons like really yeah, had like, that dog in him, like he could be as good as Giannis, if not better, because Ben Simmons like ancillary skills are better. I'm sure you probably want a crazy take from me at some point today. That's the crazy take that I'll give. That if I were building a team and I could like help mold some guy's personality, which I know like doesn't really happen, I would almost rather have Ben Simmons than I would Giannis.
Well, yeah, I mean, if I could mold his personality, sure, I'd take Ben Simmons. But you can't. Ben Simmons is a fucking cow. He's a coward, yeah. who hangs out in the dunker spot, fucking refuses to shoot anything from the perimeter, fucking refuses to even put up shots at the rim half the time for bizarre fucking God knows why reasons. Like, Giannis is just not that skilled, I guess, and I think fundamentally being, like, I would use him like a God mode version of Dwight Howard or something, like in 2009, 2010, like just fucking dominant role man. Something like, I think that's really the way to use him. Like, figure out, get yourself another playmaker somehow, however the fuck they can do that. Downsize, go Giannis in the five almost full time.
Yep.
And that's how I'd use him. Ben Simmons is a guy who, like, what am I doing with him? Like, I can't have him as my primary ball handler late in games because he's basically a non-threat as far as scoring with the ball in his hands. He sucks at shooting free throws. He is also just like, he clearly doesn't, like, Giannis, for all his flaws, wants the ball. Like, he wants to try to be that guy, even though he's not that guy. Ben Simmons doesn't even want to try. He doesn't even want to try at anything. He wants to just fucking be the same guy he was when he came in as a rookie, and he wants to be that guy forever. He doesn't want to take any shots from the perimeter. He doesn't want to really work on a post game at all, other than having that little fucking righty flip shot he takes every now and then. He doesn't really want to develop any kind of half court creation skill. I don't know. I just, Ben Simmons to me is like a fucking, the most talented clown in the NBA or something, because he's just, it's everything about him is just so disappointing to me. It's just like, you were this guy when you came in as a rookie. What are you actually better at? I have no fucking idea. I don't know. Maybe he's got like a better haircut or something. I have no clue, man. He's not, who knows? I think he's such a disappointment. Like, the fact that we can actually, like the fact that it's not insane for people to openly debate him versus Brandon Ingram is a joke. Like, the fact, like, that should just be a no-brainer, everybody accepts it kind of argument. The fact that it is a debate is a joke, and it's just because Ben Simmons is not, I'm convinced, I know Giannis works. I think he just works stupid. That's probably the best way to put it. He works hard, but he doesn't work smart. I don't think Ben Simmons works hard. I think Ben Simmons is naturally gifted. I think he is amazing at so many things that he does. And I think when he's on the court, he tries. I'm not like, he doesn't mail it in or anything like that. But I don't think he gives a fuck after, like, once the game is over, I don't think he puts in work. I don't think so. Like, because there's nothing about his game that you can tell me from his rookie season to now that you're like, oh yeah, no, he's really worked on this one thing. I have no clue. I don't think he works. I don't think he needs to work, because he basically is a max player even without working. Maybe not the best max. I mean, definitely not the best max player, and definitely not the best he could be, but he is a max worthy player even without working. So, you know, who fucking cares? I don't know. I don't see a guy to me that like is dying to get better. I actually think Giannis is dying to get better. He just has, you know, maybe he needs to like, he needs to get with somebody who's going to really challenge his kind of conception of who he is as a player.
But I feel like one of the things with Giannis is that he does get better, but he gets better at the things he's already really good at. Like, I don't get the sense that he expands his game to the point where he becomes more of a well-rounded player.
Yeah.
And as a result, it's just like, okay, cool. You're even more elite at what you're able to do.
Yeah, you're better at being gigantic now.
Right.
Good job.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I mean, like what you're saying, Jack, as well, about the footwork. And I mean, towards the end, I want to say it was, what? Was it game two? One of them. Where he's one-on-one with Blake Griffin, and it was towards the end of the game.
Game three,
thank you. And it's like, he had to pull back, and then he just went north-south and attacked the rim, and then it was a jump ball. And it's like that type of thing where, I mean, forget about post moves, just like the fact that he has no bag whatsoever, and like the whole north-south thing, like, he to me reminds me of a running back in that sense. But there's like no craftiness.
The thing with that Blake thing too was, the reason it doesn't work is because even when he gets that head of steam, everybody in the playoffs knows exactly what he wants to do. He wants to go to his right, because he doesn't have anything going to his left. He doesn't have a left hand. He can hit a lefty layup but he can't actually like do anything off the move that's contested with his left. And yeah, like that was so embarrassing. I was just like watching that. I'm like, it was like the entire sequence was so fucking, it was so pathetic. He like kind of attacks Blake at the free throw line, and then he like wants to take a pull up, but he's like, no, I don't want to do this. So then he pulls it back out, and then he drives that crazy drive, and yeah, it went nowhere. I don't know. He's just a very frustrating player to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I think that based on what, you know, what is around him, because like right now there he has no leverage. Like he signed that contract. He was happy with Chris Middleton. He was clearly happy enough with Jrue Holiday. I know they went after Bogdanovich and that whole thing was a nightmare for them, and it could have been worse if they'd signed Bogdanovich. But like he knew that this was the ceiling of the team based on everything they had. And sure, they went out and they got PJ Tucker. But like there's not a whole lot more that they can do to really make alterations with the roster. And he's totally fine with that. And I think he wants to get better in general, but it's just like I also get the sense of, at least more so from Ben Simmons, with this idea of complacency. Like Ben Simmons hasn't made, you know, the spotlight isn't directly on him. It's on Embiid, because Embiid's the best player on that roster. And if Embiid goes down, it's like, oh, well, you know, whatever, right? We lost our best player. Whereas when Simmons goes down, like he did in the last, in the bubble last season, it's like, oh, well, that's unfortunate. But like, you know, it's not his fault. He got hurt. It's a totally different story. And I think that it's not so much necessarily the perception, but just like the roles that they have the privilege, or at least for Simmons, like the role he gets to play, he just comes out looking so much better. But I agree, Schwen, the idea that it's like that he hasn't led the pack in the 2016 team. In fact, I don't think even Jaylen Brown is that far away. And, you know, I mean, what, after that, it's Dragan Bender? Like, congrats, you're not. Like, Ben, we know you're not the fourth worst player taken in the top four. That's great. But, like, you were considered one of the best prospects we've seen in such a long time. LSU was dog shit. And it was the whole idea of, okay, well, you just don't like winning, I guess. But I also thought that the, and Jack, you'll probably appreciate this too, I felt like the treatment that was given towards Anthony Edwards versus the treatment given towards Ben Simmons was night and day. Like for Ben Simmons, I felt like, and maybe this is revisionist history, but I always felt like it was, oh yeah, you know, like there's the thought of he can't lead his team, but you know, he's only there for a year and it's LSU and he had a family connection, so whatever, but he'll be fine in the pros. And then with Anthony Edwards, is like, as you talked about, like, does he really care about winning? Does he even want to play basketball? What's going on here? And I don't know, it seems like there are narratives that people just love sticking to, and they don't really want to change things that often. And like, I know Ben Simmons gets a lot of shit for not shooting threes and for his foul shots and just his decision making down the stretch, and that's all problematic. But again, like, it, he's not elevated his status to the point of it being a two-time MVP. And then, you know, like when Giannis says something about how KD played like the best player on earth last night, speaking of narrative, it's just like every single time it was, it's just like, to me, it's basically saying like, oh, I should just, you know, relinquish the crown. Like it's not even, he outplayed me. He outplayed us. It's basically like, well, there's nothing we can do to stop him. And sure, like that 1-3 down the stretch where PJ Tucker's like completely on Durant's hip, and as the shot clock's expiring, he hits it. Like that's the type of shot where it's like, yeah, you could say that's the best player on earth right this moment tonight from this game. But everything else, it's like, there are ways that you can improve. There are ways that you can change the course of everything. Because if the Bucks don't give up this monstrous lead that they have, we're not talking about, oh man, KD's the best player on earth right now. We're talking about, wow, KD had a great game, but the Bucks are up 3-2 and they're going back to Milwaukee with a chance to close it out. With no Kyrie Irving and with James Harden looking ridiculously hobbled and with Jeff Green having the game of his life, which he's probably not going to replicate. So all of these factors going into it, and it's just like the excuses will continue to pile. And yet at the same time, I'm trying to be sensitive to the fact that a lot of the true greats did not win a title until a year or even 2 years older, or even 3 years than what Giannis is. Like this shouldn't be a defining legacy type of situation for Giannis, because he still is behind where a lot of these other greats were. But with those greats, I have a lot more confidence that their games are going to be more well-rounded than where Giannis will be. And it's not just like, oh, well, Bud's holding him back. Sure. I mean, yeah, if you want to talk about how Bud doesn't play him enough or the matchups are crap, that's totally valid. But at a certain point, and no pun intended here, but the buck stops with Giannis. There has to be a point in which there's just a responsibility factor of him not getting it done. And you can't blame the supporting cast because he's still there. Like, he chose that cast. He could be a free agent this summer, chose not to be one. That's totally fine. If he wants to chase, you know, the bag, he wants that Supermax, good for him. But at a certain point, you can also point to, like, maybe the best team around isn't the best team. Maybe there were other ways that you could have explored, but you chose the money, and that's the path you've chosen. That's fine. All right. Well, I feel like now that we have torn Giannis Antetokounmpo a new one, we could...
Bucks and six, by the way. Nets and six. They don't recover from Giannis saying, I'm not the best player in the world. Sorry, but I got no faith in the Bucks.
I got faith in them enough that they'll go to seven.
I think they'll go to seven.
Shit their pants at seven.
James Harden gave me 45 minutes on a bum hamstring. He's got way more heart than the whole Bucks team combined.
James Harden fucking sucks. Fuck him.
That's the other thing. It's got to kill Giannis deep down to know that James Harden, probably his least favorite player in the NBA, like, his team outplayed him and James Harden had maybe one of the worst games of his career.
Probably. And James Harden was still able to shit talk Giannis and be correct in shit talking him during the game.
Yep.
Love it.
That's good. It's the one star that Harden can actually shit talk.
That's true. All right. Shall we move on to some questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So this first one is from One of a Kind at Red Wolf Kine, and they are asking, do you think any of these Wildcats out West actually ever end up on the Knicks, i.e. Cat or Booker, or will it always just be a bunch of smoke as long as KP is on our staff? Let's start with Jack. Seeing as how not only is he our guest, but the Karl Anthony Towns situation is near and dear to his heart. Jack, what do you think about the Kentucky, the Kentucky, because it's CAA, like the forming of two words into one, then I call it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I seriously think that the Karl Anthony Towns is not going anywhere. And a year ago, I did not feel that way because the Timberwolves really didn't have the infrastructure. We didn't know what pick we were going to have. You know, there's COVID. There was, you know, we just hadn't seen Cat play and come back. And just we didn't know that he was like physically, spiritually, and emotionally okay as a human being after, you know, such a traumatic experience with COVID. And you know, he could have retired. He could have, you know, just like not really wanted to put in any work in on his game. He could have, you know, said, I want to go to New York and be closer to my family, or I want to go to LA and be closer to like Jordan Woods and her family or whatever. And I don't think anybody would have faulted him because like he was really in a tough place. And obviously everybody just wanted the best for him as a human being, first and foremost, above anything that he is as a basketball player. And so I think everybody is very glad that, you know, I think it might've been after one of the Suns games or it was a big win the second half of the season, where Carl said like he's starting to find joy playing basketball again. And I think a lot of that has to do with Anthony Edwards. And, you know, Anthony Edwards, I think the entire NBA collective loves Anthony Edwards just because, you know, he's just like a hilarious person. And, like, he's just a super infectious personality. And he's a really tremendous player that has incredibly high potential. And then you factor in that one of his best friends is also on the team. And that the team, you know, was essentially 500. Or a little bit above 500, you know, when those three played this season, and they only got two games this season, or a game and change this season of Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns, Malik Beasley, and D'Angelo Russell. And the Timberwolves were 2-0 in those games. Those were the very first two games of the season. The four of them did not play another game together the rest of the season. So I think just based on that alone, and taking into the fact that the Wolves really did not have a good bench last year, or this past, or this season, I guess, at all, you know, that's a promising core. And I think now you factor in that the Katz obviously is from New Jersey. He grew up a ginormous Yankees fan. Alex Rodriguez is one of his favorite athletes growing up, and now Alex Rodriguez is you know, now assuming a minority ownership role with the Timberwolves once that gets finalized in the coming weeks. I think that there's just a lot in place for him to succeed. And a lot of it is going to be able to be on his terms. You know, this current regime has really, you know, catered to him as best they can, not in like a sucking up to him way, but like a, we got to win. We know we got to win, and you got to be accountable for this too. Like, it's a two-way street, but they've also made sure that they've put everything in place for like what Kat feels he needs to have to win. They've tried to go out and get that. They've very much worked in lockstep with one another. And the other thing too, that I'll add about Kat too, is this summer, really in this spring, towards the second half of the season and after the season was over, he has reiterated multiple times that he wants almost more than anything to have a Kobe-like career, or, you know, a Dirk-like career where he can really stay and build a winner in Minnesota. I think he really does give a shit about Minnesota and the fans and the people. And I think he really feels indebted to Flip Saunders, who drafted him back, I think it was in 2015. And also, you know, obviously Ryan as head coach didn't work out, but, you know, Kat was excellent under Chris Finch. Chris Finch is arguably one of the best offensive coaches in the NBA. And you add that in with the core they have and combine that with the comments he's made, and the life he's made in Minnesota. I truly am not worried about him leaving. But the other thing too, is like, if a team wants to pony up and trade for Kat, like, with all due respect, like, the Knicks just do not have anywhere near enough assets to win, and the Timberwolves are not going to accept just like 5 first-round picks or 3 first-round picks and 2 pick swaps or whatever it is. Like, that's just not going to cut it for a guy like Kat. They'll want a guy that can actually help them win now. And with Julius and Kat, I don't necessarily love that fit. Just because I think Julius is much better when he has the ball in his hands and can create. And obviously Kat and his shooting gravity would help with that, but I think you can find a more optimal fit than having, you know, two near max players and as your center and power forward. I just think that's a tough winning proposition, considering that, you know, the majority of teams that are winning NBA titles have, you know, a superstar wing player, which is not RJ Barrett, unfortunately. And then, you know, either a really good inside presence or just shooters around them. And a good lead guard, which the Knicks definitely have, with Rose and Quickly, and Alfred Payton. fuck Alfred Payton, man. So yeah, I obviously there's going to be chatter, and like that Evan Massey dude, biggest clout chaser on Twitter, who probably still slides in people's DMs asking to write for him for free. You know, it was like, oh, Karl Anthony Towns and D'Lo are both going to be on the block this year and yada, yada, and whatever. It's like, I think people hear that and they're like, oh, this guy who has a blue check mark but hasn't actually like written anything substantial or broken any like substantial rumors that have actually come true. People are just more inclined to believe that over like continually backed published statements from the person in question himself, which is like understandable. It's the nature of NBA Twitter. I think we all want chaos. And that's fine, and I respect that, and everybody's entitled to, you know, how they feel. So, but yeah, I personally don't think that the Kat is going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think Kat's going anywhere. I don't think Minnesota has any desire to trade him. And yeah, I mean, at that point, I don't really know what the discussion is. If he's going to leave, maybe it'll happen at the end of his contract, or a year, the year his contract is expiring. So what is that, like 2023, I think
24.
Yeah. 24.
Yeah, 24. So 23, yeah, maybe then. Maybe that's when, like, anything would get serious. I don't think that's anything that'll happen anytime in the next year or two, though. I'm not really sure how to answer this question. Like, will it help get Kentucky guys that we have Kenny Payne? Is that part of the plan? I have no. I'm sure it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt that, like, all these guys love Kenny Payne, and that Kentucky happens to have a ton of fucking star players in the NBA. No, that doesn't hurt. I don't know. Like, will Booker leave Phoenix? Right now, it doesn't look like it, but who knows? Like, if Chris Paul ever miraculously finally hits the wall and their level drops off, is he going to stay there? I don't fucking know. I would probably not, but then it's like, you know, that's an unknown quantity. It's hard to imagine a scenario where if Phoenix is as good as they are right now, that he's going to be like, no, get me the fuck out of here. I have a tough time seeing that. So, you know, you're basically talking about, like, I mean, to get a guy to leave, they need to be unhappy and they need to be with organizations that are incompetent, and not see and basically leave the player disillusioned. If there's some, like, you know, I think a couple of guys that come to mind would be, like, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, De'Aaron Fox, not anytime in the next year or two, maybe, but
I think Fox could be coming sooner than you think.
Yeah, maybe. Like,
I mean, his extension, I think, is going to start this upcoming season. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I don't get the sense that De'Aaron Fox enjoys Luke Walton at all. I don't really know how, like, anybody not named Steve Kerr with back surgery, like, enjoys Luke Walton. Like, he just doesn't seem like a guy I would enjoy playing for, or, like, want to stay somewhere for, you know? And
yeah, it's so weird.
And the one thing that I'll say about, like, the whole Knicks Kentucky thing, like, I definitely think, like, that's something that is definitely a theme, and I definitely think it's fair for people to point it out. I know that I pointed it out on a Strickland podcast one of the last times I was on, and Schwinn and maybe it was Drew or maybe it was Prez or Stacey, I don't remember, just tore me to shreds about it, which is, like, fine, like, whatever. But I definitely think that this whole CAA connection matters much more than the Kentucky connection does, just because I think, you know, ownership and like your handlers and your agents, like, want to obviously be in situations where they've been treated well before and where like their clients have found success. And I definitely think, like, you're playing for probably the third most important franchise in the NBA, arguably, or second, like, behind maybe the Lakers and maybe the Celtics, depending on, like, how old the person is.
The Celtics are not important unless you're
fine. I mean, I would personally say the Knicks are, but, you know, I don't know. Like, I've also lived in Boston for 4 years, and, like, people love the Celtics. At any rate, irrelevant. Like, it's a very marketable place, and the Knicks have a very, very bright future and have a great team. So, I definitely think that CAA thing is something to watch, and that the Kentucky thing is, and Kenny Payne thing is more of, like, an icing on the cake, if you will.
Yeah, I think, like, the Payne thing, I feel like it works, that connection works more for people that are like a Nerlens Noel, like one of these, like some of these guys that like Malik Monk, like Malik Monk this offseason. I think that could be a draw for him. Like, oh man, like my career hasn't gone like I expected it to so far. I know Kenny Payne, he's this awesome guy on the staff. Like, I have a really good relationship with him. I know they have all these Kentucky guys that I'm, you know, presumably have some connection with. Like, those are the type of guys I see the Kentucky thing mattering for more. Whereas, like, if De'Aaron Fox went to fucking, I don't know, Kansas, like, and he was on the trading block, like, why would I think that the Knicks would be, like, why would he, I just can't imagine a scenario where, like, the Knicks would be like, well, he didn't go to Kentucky, so I'm not sure if we, like, have enough intel on him to, you know, like, that just doesn't make sense to me. I do think that, like, I don't really understand The Shai Gilgeous-Alexander thing is interesting to me because, like, they basically shut him down this year because they were winning too much to tank with him, which, like, is fine, I guess. But also, I guess it'll really be interesting to see what they do this offseason, because if I were them, I would immediately, I mean, I would offer him, like, that full max, whatever the fuck it is, extension.
If you're the Thunder?
Yeah, if I'm the Thunder, I'm offering that to him.
Yeah, and one thing on SGA, he was actually hurt. Like, he's not playing in the Olympics this year because he still hasn't recovered from the injury that he has.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I still think that they were playing fucking games with a lot of shit this year.
Oh, they for sure were, as a fan of a tanking franchise. Yes, I know all about that.
I just find that entire situation interesting because, okay, if you offer the max, I think he signs it and then you move on with your life. If they don't offer it, which is, like, reasonable enough, I guess, like, I can see an argument where somebody would be like, I'm not sure yet if he's worth the max. And if you, like you said, if the injury is legit, maybe they're worried, you know, let's see how he comes back first. And if he's still as good as he was, then obviously we'll give him the max next offseason. Like, I wonder about that, because we also know before the draft now, which has been reported, his draft, that 2018 draft, his handlers were, like, desperate for the Knicks to work him out and potentially select him. I have no idea if his handlers are the same or whatever. But, like, things like that are interesting just because you never know how shit plays out. Like, what if he just goes there, it's obviously, and he's like, I'm not making any fucking money here off the court. I'm sick of playing for this franchise that wants to, like, tank for the next 2 years so that we can get Cade and then we can get fucking, who's the guy? Emeny Bates. Yeah, like, that's our plan. I don't want to do this for the next 2 years. Like, I wonder about shit like that. Like, I do, because I think at some point, one of these younger guys that's on a rookie scale deal is going to, like, be like, trade me now or I'm signing the qualifying offer and I'm leaving in a year. I don't know if it's him. He's he's a really good kid from everything you could see. But, like, I mean, if people, I don't know if anybody remembers this, but going back to that draft, like, his entire thing with that draft was really weird, where, like, there was a rumor that, you know, he worked out for the Clippers and then he basically just didn't, he disappeared off the map. Like, nobody could get in touch with him. There was all these reports about, like, his mom was his agent or something, I think. So, like, everybody was trying to, like, get in touch with him through his mom, and it was, like, a disaster. All I would say is, like, that's an interesting move for a rookie. Not one I even begrudge him, but it's, like, interesting to see how he tried to angle himself to a place he wanted at the draft. And if the team around him hasn't changed, it wouldn't fully shock me if he tried to angle himself somewhere he wanted to be before signing that contract extension or whatever. So I don't know. He's one that, like, I go back and forth on it. And I know Zach Lowe had, like, a weird thing about him in the middle of the year where he said, like, you know, OKC's timeline might not match up with his timeline for whatever that means. I'm assuming that if he said that, that's something that he had heard from somebody. But I mean, I didn't really understand it, but, like, I kind of understand where he's coming from. But yeah, I just, you know, there's something there that's, like, a little off to me. That's one I would, like, definitely be keeping my eye on. And I would probably, if that ever became an option, I would give up quite a bit to get SGA.
I think in terms of at least regimes, like, the Thunder, yeah, they could always flip him, and who knows what comes about. I mean, I still believe that they'll throw the kitchen sink at whoever gets the number one pick in the event that they do not. And they could get away with it and be in better shape than probably every team in the NBA in terms of future draft assets. But I don't know. I mean, if you also do get Cade, then, and you play him with SGA, your timeline is rapidly different. Like, you're not necessarily focusing on tanking the next year. You can afford to win games and fool around, and basically then it's like, hey, SGA, we have Cade. Remember how we were winning too many games and then you got hurt, and we know you got hurt for real, but also we fooled around with that. Like, that doesn't have to happen anymore if you're healthy. I just think it takes one player in one season to just like have all of this wipe away. And to me, it's similar to with Cat, where like, as Jack was saying, the idea of Cat maybe going elsewhere, that certainly could have been a factor before. Now it's less so because the franchise has built around him long enough and well enough. And, you know, like the one thing about these players is that based on how the contract structure is, like what happens in your first 3 to 4 years isn't really that big of a deal. It's when you get closer to year 5, year 6, maybe even year 7, where it's a little bit more problematic. Like with Kevin Love, he did not make the playoffs for what, Jack? Was it the first 7 seasons of his career in Minnesota? Something like that? So I think, was he drafted in 2008? So, and he traded in what, 2014? So, you know, yeah, something along those lines. 6 years, right. So, you know, and I remember comments about him saying like, oh, when I'm playing with Team USA, I'm the only person who has not made it to the playoffs. And, you know, like, I think that there's a patience and a waiting period. It's something that also Porzingis just apparently didn't really have, depending on what you believe with the reports. And I do believe that he didn't want to be here. I also believe the Knicks really fucked it up. But kind of like looking at all of that, I don't, in terms of the qualifying offer and having it done, like it's been said before, I tweeted about it today even, like to me it has to be Zion in the sense of he's going on 3 coaches in 3 years now. Griffin is just destroying any ability to properly build around him. He just amasses talent, but it's not really fitting well. And he is also the only player who is in the financial position where he can afford to take the qualifying offer and no one will really blame him, and he could just sleep well at night because basically he will have made over $135 million just from playing and Nike alone 5 years into his career. And that doesn't account for any of the other endorsements that have happened prior. So, and the other thing is that these companies can also make up any pitfalls that he has. And, you know, like if you're Nike and you know that his contract is ending year 5, and if he signs a qualifying offer that's the same year that the contract matches up, instead of $575, you say, okay, you go to a big market like New York, we'll pay you so much more than that. You know, I mean, it could be something closer to like, what, I don't know, if it's $575, that's what, 15 a year, right? If I'm doing the math correctly. So, you know, you could easily be paying him at least $35, $40 million just for being in New York and being a bigger player at that point. So I don't know if other teams are that willing. It seems like there are also a lot of teams that like they're in good spots and anything can change. But I feel like a lot of the young talent has really popped to a point where it didn't seem to. Like there's a big gap to me between 2011 and 2016 or so, where the talent overall is just really lacking. You can find it for sure. There's Kawhi, there's Giannis, there's Kat, Beal, like Anthony Davis, they exist. But it feels like this next crop of players have really started to blossom more in the last 3 or 4 years. And it'll be fascinating to see kind of like how their teams build around them and then who kind of rises to the top eventually and says, I want to be out of here, and how you line that up with the Knicks. But I guess just to go back to the kind of main point, I agree, Kenny Payne being here and the whole Kentucky connection, I don't see it as a big deal. I also see it as icing on the cake. Also just based on the fact that Kenny Payne is interviewing for other places. Like he interviewed at DePaul. Whether or not that was a courtesy interview or not, like the risk of him leaving is there. And if he's gone,
it was okay. A courtesy interview.
Yeah, right. So, you know, like it sucks if he leaves, but you also have Leon Rose. And I don't even say that from a CAA perspective. I say that from a Calipari perspective, which is like, no matter what, they're always going to be close. They're always going to be thick as thieves. So you're still going to find that pipeline of being like, hey, Coach Cal knows that this is a good place to play. And like, we've seen people have success here. We know Julius Randle, a Wildcat alumnus as well. Like it's going to work its way out. It's just probably not because of Kenny Payne, but just like, oh yeah, we love him and he's there. If he's still there, that's great.